Thank you for taking the time to listen to one of the recent sermons preached at Wilton Baptist Church. It is our desire as a church to strive together in building a faith, family, and future that honors and glorifies our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. If we can be a help to you in any way, please visit our website at wiltonbaptistchurch.com.
Looking forward to a good Sunday and this month of Thanksgiving. I always look forward to giving thanks and our Give Thanks service, and so I hope you make plans for that as well. The Progressive Dinner last week, that was really a blessing. Thank you to all those who participated in that. That was tremendous. And so good things coming up in these days. Good medicine for bitterness. That's what we'll call our message tonight, 1 Samuel 18. One person said, an irritable person is like a hedgehog rolled up the wrong way, tormenting himself with his own prickles. Perhaps that's an irritable person that you know, kind of like that. Bitterness, animosity. Animosity cloaked in piety is a demon, even if it sits in church praising the Creator. Animosity is part of resentment and bitterness as well. Oswald Chambers, the writer, said, if there is the tiniest grudge in your mind against anyone, your spiritual penetration into the knowledge of God stops. It really kind of freezes your fellowship with the Lord to have bitterness and resentment. In our passage before us, we have Saul. He's King Saul, and he cannot stand seeing someone else be successful. And jealousy and resentment builds up in his life. And it really escalates in some tragic ways. Notice tonight as we read this passage that Bible truth can resolve resentments. Bible truth can resolve resentments. And let's notice the text here. Verse 1 of 1 Samuel 18. It came to pass, when he had made an end of speaking unto Saul, that the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David. And Jonathan loved him as his own soul, and Saul took him that day and would let him go no more home to his father's house. Then Jonathan and David made a covenant because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was upon him, and gave it to David, and his garments, even to his sword, and his bow, and to his girdle. And David went out whithersoever Saul sent him, and behaved himself wisely. And Saul set him over the men of war, and he was accepted in the sight of all the people, and also in the sight of Saul's servants. So, in the previous chapters, we have the Philistine battle, and the famous giant Goliath, and David comes out and is used by God to save the day, and he smites and kills the Philistine, and then he is kind of promoted in a way. He's brought in and he's introduced to King Saul for the second time, and now he, David, and Jonathan become very good friends. Saul says, I like this boy. I like this fella. I'd like for him to lead my army. People are admiring him. He seems to be very resourceful, and God's hand is upon him. And so it pleased the people. It pleased Saul. It pleased Saul's servants. Notice verse 6. Now, David's just a young man. He's not very old at this point. It came to pass as they came when David was returned from the slaughter of the Philistines, that the women came out of all the cities of Israel, singing and dancing, to meet King Saul with tabrets and joy, and with instruments of music. And the women answered one another as they played, and said, Saul hath slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s. Now this was a practice. They would celebrate, like a victory march, if you would. The army's coming back, we just won the battle. And they're celebrating, there's joy in the nation. And notice how they compare, though. King Saul, he's slain his thousands. What a fighter he was. But David, wow, his tens of thousands. They made a bigger deal about David. And notice the rest of the verses. And Saul was very wroth. And the saying displeased him, and he said, they have ascribed unto David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed but thousands. And what can he have more but the kingdom? And Saul eyed David from that day and forward. And it came to pass on the morrow that the evil spirit from God came upon Saul. And he prophesied in the midst of the house, and David played with his hand as at other times. And there was a javelin in Saul's hand. David had previously played musical instruments there. He was playing a musical instrument again, perhaps singing a song. And Saul cast the javelin, verse 11, for he said, I will smite David even to the wall with it. And David avoided out of his presence twice. That happened twice. David's playing and singing. This evil spirit comes upon Saul. He grabs a javelin, maybe from a soldier next to him, and he pierces the wall, sticks in the wall. David avoids it both times. And notice verse 12, and Saul was afraid of David. Why? Because the Lord was with him, and the Lord was departed from Saul. That's the way this verse is reading. Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was with him and was departed from Saul. There's a great jealousy there. There's jealousy. There was some resentment that starts from this day forward. Therefore, Saul removed him from him and made him his captain over 1,000, and he went out and came in before the people. So I'll just give you 1,000 guys. You go on out and get away from me like that. And David behaved himself wisely in all his ways, and the Lord was with him. Wherefore, when Saul saw that he behaved himself very wisely, he was afraid of him. We heard that somewhere, verse 12. So this fear is growing, but all Israel and Judah loved David because he went out and came in before them. He was a real leader and someone that they respected. Let's make some notes or some observations tonight about some good medicine for bitterness. And in order for us to understand 2 Samuel, that's where most of our messages in this series will come from, we need to understand 1 Samuel and this royal line that begins here in early Israel. Let's notice, first of all, the manifestation of bitterness. The manifestation of bitterness. Saul has an angry heart. Chapter 18, verse 8, Saul was very wroth. He was very angry. This jealousy gave way to, of course, because of his pride. And he said, I'm against David. I'm angry about this. They were magnifying David above me. And what else can he have but the kingdom itself? Now, folks, here is the king of all Israel. He has a unified kingdom. And here's David. He's just a little fella, a young man. And he was jealous of him. He was resentful of him already. And so the manifestation of bitterness, it could be seen in an angry heart. Do you have an angry heart? Are you quick to anger? It could be the root of bitterness is underlying that anger in your life. On March 2nd, 2004, police were summoned to Spring Haven Retirement Community in Winter Haven, Florida. Lee Thos, 62-year-old resident of the retirement community, got into a fight with another resident, 86-year-old William Hawker, after the older man accused him of handling the lettuce with his bare hands instead of using the utensils. This is the first time in 25 years I've heard of something like this, said Jill Andrew, a Spring Haven spokeswoman. Hawker told Thos no one wanted to eat food that he had been playing with. Thos yelled and cursed at him, Hawker told police, and Hawker started to call him names. Then witnesses said Thos began to punch Hawker in the face. Another resident, Alan Croft, 79, jumped in and was bitten on the arm by Thos. The younger man's mother, Arlene Thos, in her 80s, was also a resident, and she was cut in the arm as she tried to break up this melee. Harry Griffin was 92. He got cut in the head and was knocked down as all the diners fled the dining hall in that retirement center. Miss Andrews concluded, we see some humor in it. People think because these people live in a retirement home that they've quit living, but we have 300 vibrant, personalities here. Why do you tell that story? Because you can't outgrow bitterness. You can't outlive or outgrow resentment. Folks, you don't outgrow anger. You could be in your 90s and still have a massive problem with anger. The only way to get rid of anger in your life is to surrender it to God. It's to yield to the Lord. Now, I've thought mistakenly that maybe people will grow out of it because of time. It's not just time. They must grow in Christ. They must grow in the Lord. It's more than just, well, I'm a little bit older, a little bit wiser. It has to be something spiritual in a person's life. You do not outgrow anger. If there's resentment there, that's the root of the anger, pull that out. How about this evil eye in verse 9? And Saul eyed David from that day and forward. Saul was looking for trouble. He was looking for accusation. He was looking for problems in David's life, but he went out and came in before the people, and he always did good. David was a great example here. We already read several times how he behaved himself wisely. And so Saul becomes more fearful, and at the same time, he gets this evil eye. He's just looking at every nuance of David and every word of David. He's always trying to find something he can point at David and say that is wrong with him. And folks, when you start to look at somebody quite like that, you will find things wrong with someone. You will. And most of the time, there's things that are not near as bad as what you're doing already in your life. That's why Christ said we need to make sure we look at our own life before someone else. See, he was trying to watch with anticipation for failure. And perhaps you look around at other family members or Christians with an evil eye, and you're looking for something to accuse them of or something that they would be failing in, and aha, I caught him, I got him, and makes yourself kind of feel better. That's not the way to live. That's rooted in bitterness, an evil eye. This is how this bitterness and resentment manifests itself. Notice how he has this evil spirit in verse 10 and 11. It came to pass on the morrow that the evil spirit from God came upon Saul, and he prophesied in the midst of the house. And David played with his hand as at other times, and there was a javelin in Saul's hand. And Saul cast the javelin, for he said, I will smite David even to the wall with it. And David avoided out of his presence twice. Now, it's interesting. Saul is actually considered a prophet at times in early Israel. He would prophesy. Sometimes it's good things and sometimes it's bad things. But he was known for that as well, as the Spirit of God would come upon him. And so he has this evil spirit that he has now. And, of course, it goes right along with that evil eye. Notice in the fearful attitude, verses 12 and 16, Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was with him and was departed from Saul. And in verse 16, but all Israel and Judah loved David because he went out and came in before them. Oh, verse 15, wherefore when Saul saw that he behaved himself very wisely, he was afraid of him. A very fearful attitude. Now, in the next few verses, we're going to see that Saul tries to control David. He tries to put his claws into David, to spy on David, to be having people that he thinks he can trust to tell him the scoop on David, and things such as this. All of this is rooted in a fearful attitude, jealousy, which led to resentment that grows in this fear, a fearful attitude. When I was in high school, I played on the soccer team, played soccer. And we had one of the fastest runners, one of the fastest athletes in all of our state. I mean, he could really move fast. And I played right forward or right wing, and that's the guys on the front of the soccer field who try to score the ball. He would play either striker or left. We would play up front like that. And this guy was just blazing fast. I mean, the fastest person I've ever been around. And one game, a storm had come, and the field was flooded. And it was like 1 or 2 inches of water standing on the field. But we went ahead and played. There was no lightning, so we went ahead and played. It was really a fun game. The ball floated. So whenever you kick it, it kind of skip across like you skip a rock across water. So it was really amazing. This guy scored a triple hat trick. Well, now what I mean by that is he scored three goals, and then he scored three more goals, and then he scored three more goals. I got several assists by just kicking it to him. It was easy for me. I'd kick the ball to him, and he would just outrun everybody and kick the ball in. I was never jealous that he scored so many more goals than me. He scored like probably 50-1 or 50-2 that I would score, something like that. I never felt jealous about that at all. In fact, I was happy that he was on my team. That year, we defeated a third-ranked team in our state, and we went very far in the state playoffs in the state of Ohio. It was good. I liked the guy. Now, I was never jealous of him. He was dumb as rocks. He really was. He wasn't all there. He did a lot of drugs and things like that. I don't know how he was able to do what he did, but he was the fastest person. I was never jealous of him. I thank God for that. That's not a bragging thing. I'm just saying that I wasn't jealous of that. Some people resent the success of other people, and it starts to. I got this comparison thing, and you know, I'm not as good as him in that, but I'm better in this area. Or they'll start to compare, and resentment will build up. Saul killed his thousands, and David his tens of thousands. Here goes the resentment. Folks, Saul was the king. He did not have anything to prove. He didn't have anything to prove. He had nothing to be jealous of. One writer said, if you hug to yourself any resentment against anybody else, you destroy the bridge by which God would come to you. Another statement, it is never the big things that disturb us, but the trivial things. Oswald Chambers suggested that. It's a good statement. The manifestation of bitterness. How about the manipulation of bitterness? Now, this story takes a turn. Here's a guy that is against David, but now he is starting to offer his daughter in a wedding ceremony to the man that he despises so much. There's a wedding about to take place. Let's keep reading here in verse 18. And David said unto Saul, who am I, what is my life, or my father's family in Israel, that I should be the son-in-law to the king? Now, remember when David went out to fight with Goliath? They had said, here are some prizes or awards, payment that Saul will give to whoever kills Goliath. One of those conditions or gifts, if you would be the hand of his oldest daughter in marriage, to marry into the royal line. Verse 19, but it came to pass at the time when Merab, Saul's daughter, should have been given to David. He was the one who defeated Goliath, that she was given to Adriel, the Mehothelite, to wife. No, I changed my mind. Somebody else. But notice this. Michal, or Michal, kind of like Michelle, Michal, Saul's daughter, loved David. She saw him in his parades or something, you know, coming back. And they told Saul, and the thing pleased him. Ooh. Yeah, you know, maybe I wasn't thinking too clearly when I took the first daughter away. This sounds like a good idea. And Saul said, I will give him her that she may be a snare to him. He didn't want them to live happily ever after. A snare to him. And that the hand of the Philistines may be against him. Wherefore Saul said to David, thou shalt this day be my son-in-law in one of the twain. And Saul commanded his servant, saying, commune with David secretly, and say, behold, the king hath delight in thee, and all his servants love thee. Now, therefore, be the king's son-in-law. So he even sends people with the secret methods, trying to convince David, like, hey, you can be the son-in-law, you can marry to the royal line. And Saul's servants spake those words in the ears of David. And David said, seemeth it to you a light thing to be the king's son-in-law, seeing I am a poor man and lightly esteemed? And the servants of Saul told him, saying, on this manner spake David, And Saul said, thus shall you say to David, the king desires not any dowry. See, that was what David was talking about.
I'm a poor man. I can't pay into a dowry. I can't attain into this royal heritage that is being offered to me.
So Saul responds with this idea, not a normal dowry, but 100 foreskins of the Philistines to be avenged of the king's enemies. But Saul thought to make David fall by the hand of the Philistines. So in verse 21, what is said there at the end of the statement, thou shalt be this day my son-in-law in the one of the twain. If it's a normal dowry, or we'll figure out some other way, we'll find a way to make it happen. That's what that phrase has to do with. We'll find a way, one way or the other, you can marry into my family. He sends the servants, they start to clarify with David, and then he sends it back and says, go ahead and kill some Philistines. All in the back of Saul's mind is, okay, one guy, David, against 100 Philistines, he takes their foreskins, it's a very graphic term to think about, but it means that he killed all of these guys. And so he wants him to be in a place where he would be in great danger. He thinks 100 against one? David won't stand a chance. And when the servants told David these words, it pleased David well to be the king's son-in-law. He had great admiration, and the days were not expired, so it went by really quick. Wherefore David arose and went, he and his men, and slew of the Philistines, not 100, but 200 men. And David brought their foreskins, and they gave them in a full tale to the king, that he might be the king's son-in-law. And Saul gave him Michal, his daughter, to wife. And Saul saw and knew that the Lord was with David, and that Saul's daughter loved him. And Saul was yet the more afraid of David, and Saul became David's enemy continually. Notice, David wasn't becoming the enemy. Saul was becoming the enemy. Why? Bitterness, resentment, and jealousy. Now, with this wedding, he adds conditions to the relationship. Now, if you not just killed Goliath, but now if you would go kill another 100 Philistines, of course, David comes through even more, double that. He attempts to spy on David. He gives his daughter with this idea that she'll be a snare to him. She can tell me what's happening, and I can know his every move. But this arranged, so what seems to be an arranged marriage, that first one, that didn't work. And so he gives Michelle, and she loved David, eventually weds him. We'll come back to her story in several weeks. He attempts to snare David using his daughter. Notice the wording there in verse 22. He commanded his servants to befriend David and plant ideas in his mind. And Saul hoped that the Philistines would kill David in verse 17. David needed to get this dowry for marriage. One of the twain, like we mentioned earlier, bring me some Philistines, is what he's saying. This is all caused by worry. Worry. He was afraid. Jealousy is rooted in fear. Saul is jealous and fearful of the shepherd boy turned captain in the army. Fear and worry go together. Friends, I encourage you to avoid letting fear guide your decisions and guide your life. Avoid letting fear guide how you think and process what's going on. There's the paralysis of analysis. There's the what if. What we can overthink things. We can say what if about everything. And then we get to be like this, where I need to be in control. Everything has to be under my thumb and under my control. That's how Saul was. Very manipulative and controlling. The manifestation of bitterness and the manipulation of bitterness. Next, in number three, our final point then is this, the medicine for bitterness. The medicine for bitterness. And the man normally clicking through this isn't here, so I'll catch you up to it. How's that? I just get going and forget about it. So here's the medicine for bitterness. Now, like we mentioned earlier, time does not help. A change of scene does not change the heart. Resentment can impact other people. Let's fast forward a few pages. 1 Samuel 22. 1 Samuel 22, we'll look at verse 6 through verse 19. When Saul heard that David was discovered,
And the men that were with him now saw a boat in Gilboa under the tree of Ramah, having his spear in his hand, and all his servants were standing about him. Then Saul said to his servants that stood about him, "Hear now, you Benjamites, will the son of Jesse give every one of you fields and vineyards, and make you all captains of thousands and captains of hundreds? Then all of you have conspired against me, and there is none that showeth me that my son hath made a league with the son of Jesse, and there is none of you that is sorry for me, or showeth unto me that my son hath stirred up my servant against me to lie in wait as at this day." He's trying to play the victim here in this, what he's, in the speech that he's giving. Why didn't he even tell me my son has even made a pact with him? He's even said, you know, David can be the king, it's all right. And he has all this resentment boiling over in him. And he's upset with his other people around him, and he feels like he's being conspired against. And then answered Doeg, the Edomite. Now, Doeg is a slimy character. He really is. He's a slimy character. He's not a good man at all. He's an Edomite. Then answered Doeg the Edomite, which was set over the servants of Saul, and said, "I saw the son of Jesse come into Nob to Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub. And he inquired of the Lord for him, and gave him victuals, and gave him the sword of Goliath, the Philistine." Now, Ahimelech was a priest, and he was a man who loved Jehovah God. And so David goes to him and is asking him, "I'm on the lam right now. My face is all over Israel's most wanted right now. What do you think I should do? What's going on? I'm kind of hungry. Can I have something to eat?" He gives him something to eat. "We don't have very many weapons. Can you give, you have Goliath's sword. I can handle it now. I'll take Goliath's sword." And he gives it to him. Then the king sent to call Ahimelech the priest, the son of Ahitub, and all his father's house, the priests that were in Nob. And they came all of them to the king. And Saul said, "Hear now, thou son of Ahitub." And he said, "Here am I, my lord." And Saul said unto him, "Why have you conspired against me, thou son of Jesse, in that thou hast given him bread and a sword, and hast inquired of God for him?" He was praying for him, "that he should rise against me to lie in wait as at this day." Now notice Ahimelech's answer, because everyone sees this except for Saul. And the reason Saul doesn't see it is because of the resentment and the bitterness and the jealousy in his heart. Ahimelech answered the king and said, "And who is so faithful among all thy servants as David?" Wait a minute. I know you've been running around the country chasing him. But who is more faithful than David? And he's even your son-in-law. What's the deal with this? The king's son-in-law, and goeth at thy bidding. You send him out with 1,000 troops. Everyone knows he went out and slain his tens of thousands of Philistines. And is honorable in thine house. Everyone's been talking about how honorable David is, even when you're throwing javelins at him and spears. He's still being faithful. Did I then begin to inquire of God for him? Be it far from me. Let not the king impute anything unto his servant, nor to all the house of my father. For thy servant knew nothing of all this, less or more. All I knew of David is he did the right thing. That's all I've known about him all this time. That's what the priest says here. And the king said, "Thou shalt surely die, Ahimelech, thou and all thy father's house." And the king said to the footman that stood about him, "Turn and slay the priest of the Lord, because their hand is also with David, and because they knew when he fled, and they did not show it to me, that the servants of the king would not put forth their hand to fall upon the priest of the Lord." Kind of like what David would say about Saul. He said, "I don't want to put my hand on God's anointed." These guys were soldiers. They had walked around with King Saul. They knew his heart. They knew what he wanted. He said, "I want you guys to kill all these priests." And they had the weapons in their hand. They said, "Saul, we're not going to do that." And the king said to Doeg, remember the spy, the guy who told him about David going to the priest to begin with? "Turn thou and fall upon the priest." And Doeg the Edomite turned, and he fell upon the priest, and slew on that day 85 persons that did wear a linen ephod. 85 people who loved God. He killed them all. And Nob, the city of the priests, smote he with the edge of the sword, both men and women, children and sucklings, and oxen and asses and sheep with the edge of the sword. He went on a rampage. I mean, he didn't stop with the priests. According to that verse, he went on killing anything that was breathing. And one of the sons of Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, named Abathar, escaped. One survivor, and fled after David. And Abathar showed David that Saul had slain the Lord's priest. And David said to Abathar, I knew it that day when Doeg, the Edomite, was there, that he would surely tell Saul. I have occasioned the death of all the persons of thy father's house. Abide thou with me, fear not, for he that seeketh thy life seeketh my life, seeketh thy life. But with me thou shalt be in safe guard. He said, I'll take care of you. So what is the medicine for bitterness? If time doesn't help, I mean, this is like the climax of evil when you think about what King Saul does because of his hatred for one man named David. The names of Gilbert and Sullivan, do you know those names? Gilbert and Sullivan, known by lovers of music all around the world. They produced 14 operas together from the period of 1871 to 1896. The musicals like the HMS Pinafore, the Pirates of Penzance, and the Mikado. Gilbert's words allied perfectly to Sullivan's music to produce incredible productions. The tragedy, however, is that these two men detested each other. The two men never liked one another, but the problem came to a head one time when Sullivan ordered some carpet for the theater that they had bought. When Gilbert saw the bill, he hit the roof. Neither of the two men could control his temper, and they battled it out in court. They never spoke again with one another for the rest of their lives, as long as they lived. When Sullivan wrote the music for a new production, he mailed it to Gilbert. When Gilbert wrote the words, he mailed it back to Sullivan. Once they were forced to be together during a curtain call, but they stood on opposite sides of the stage and bowed in different directions so as not to see each other. They knew how to make beautiful music, but they knew nothing about harmony. What a tragedy. Talented, skillful people with such rage and resentment in their life. How do you deal with resentment? Well, know several things. First of all, we can't fix people. Well, you know, if I'm going to be angry with them, or if I show them, you know, I'll show how bitter and angry I am, and that'll just teach them a lesson. You actually hurt yourself. You hurt yourself. We can talk about physically, you know, heart, blood pressure, all that type of stuff. It does impact. It does impact psychologically. Most importantly, spiritually. You know what? It makes a roadblock between you and God. How do you deal with resentment? We cannot fix people, but we can deal with the sin in our own heart. Realize it. Realize the sin. Listen to this. Proverbs 14:10. If you want to mark this down, very interesting verse. The heart knoweth his own bitterness. You know, if you have bitterness in your heart, you can know it. You can know it. We can try to cover it up, but the heart knoweth his own bitterness. Proverbs 14:10. And a stranger doth not intermeddle with his joy. Yeah, I don't want to get around that guy. He has some issues, you know, it's because of bitterness. So realize it. Realize the bitterness that may be in your heart or resentment towards somebody, and then replace it. Replace it. Ephesians 4:31, let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. Isn't that amazing? That list of sins begins with the B word, bitterness. Resentment goes a long way to other sins in our life. In contrast, what do you replace that bitterness with? Be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God, for Christ's sake, hath forgiven you. That's what you do. Deal with the resentment. Realize it and replace it. And then look for blessings in your life. Look for blessings in your life. 1 Samuel 24, verses 1 through 16. Saul could have counted this as a blessing. He should have counted it as a blessing. And also in 1 Samuel 26, there's another event real similar to this. But notice in chapter 24. It came to pass when Saul returned from following the Philistines that it was told him, saying, Behold, David is in the wilderness of En-Gedi. I've been to En-Gedi, and En-Gedi is along the Dead Sea, and there's massive rock-faced cliffs facing the Dead Sea, and in En-Gedi, there's a few palm trees, and it's like a little spring, because there's two springs there. There are two natural springs. One of them is called the King's Spring, because anyone traveling through, especially someone like Saul, they would travel through. There's also a spring, I think they call it David's Spring, or something to that effect, or the Royal Spring, and animals would naturally, like a camel or a donkey, they would find water. And so these springs back in the mountains, kind of far back, and so this is where David was at in En-Gedi, and it was a stopping point out in the wilderness for the mere fact that there's water there. And so it was told Saul, Saul, that's where he's at. He's over here in En-Gedi. And so Saul goes over there with 3,000 chosen men, verse 2, out of all Israel, and went to seek David and his men upon the rocks of the wild goats. Remember the animals? They'd all go find water, so there'd be animals around there, around those palm trees and the water coming out of the ground. And he came to the sheep coast, by the way, and there was a cave. By the way, there's a lot of caves. If you go over there and say, which cave was David in and which cave was Saul in, they'd say, take your pick. There's a lot of caves in that rock face over there. And it's amazing to look at. And so he went in to cover his feet, and David and his men remained in the sides of the cave. So David was already in there. Saul picked, he picked a lucky number. Out of the 1,000 caves there, he picked the one cave that David was in. Of course, God orchestrated all of this. He walks right in, and he does whatever he's doing there, and David's right beside him. And the men of David said unto him, Behold the day of which the Lord said unto thee, Behold, I will deliver thine enemy into thine hand, that thou mayest go to him as it shall seem good unto thee. Then David arose and cut off the skirt of Saul's robe privily. You know what they were saying? Go ahead and take his life, man. Just go ahead and get rid of him. You can be the king then. It's all good. We know you're already set to be the king. But he didn't want to do that. Verse 5, it came to pass afterward that David's heart smote him because he had cut off Saul's skirt. Think of a long robe. So it was kind of flowing down, and he cuts the hem of the garment. He cuts part of it off. And then his heart starts to hurt because he knows, I just touched the king. And God had his hand on the king. And God put the king there, even though the king's been doing this to me. And he felt great regret and remorse about it. Very similar thing happens in 1 Samuel 26. David goes to the camp again, spares Saul's life. You know, if you want to overcome bitterness and resentment, instead of counting your problems, count your blessings. Saul should have looked at this and said, what a man of integrity and character. He could have killed me twice. I was a sitting duck, but he didn't. But instead of counting his blessings, he was angry and angry some more. Now, Saul repents both times. He says, oh, David, I'm sorry. He starts to cry. And the Bible says in that last example in 1 Samuel 26 that David goes his own way. He doesn't return to Saul ever again. He goes his own way. He does not trust himself to be around the King Saul anymore. Folks, forgiveness and trust are two different things. You know, he forgave him for all the times he threw the spear at him and chasing around all those years in the wilderness. But he knew he couldn't trust Saul, and so he goes his own way, as the Bible says. Now, Saul's life ends in great tragedy. He had been a great king in some ways and had done many good things in many different ways in early Israel, being the first king there. Look over in 1 Samuel 28, if you would. 1 Samuel 28, a tragic ending for this man, verse 15 to 23. Saul had outlawed witches and witchcraft. But he gets really desperate and he seeks out someone who he thinks can help. Remember, God was no longer with him. Samuel had died, and so he didn't have the spiritual mentor that he had previously. And so he goes to a medium or to a witch and he says, would you conjure up my friend Samuel? And notice verse 15. Samuel said to Saul, "Why hast thou disquieted me to bring me up?" And Saul answered, "I am sore distressed, for the Philistines make war against me, and God has departed from me, and answereth me no more, neither by prophets nor by dreams. Therefore I have called thee, that thou mayest make known unto me what I shall do." The Philistines were having another campaign against Saul, and he has this problem with David, and he's at his wit's end, because, of course, he's been away from God for so long, he didn't know how to cope or handle. Then said Samuel, "Wherefore, then, dost thou ask of me, seeing the Lord has departed from thee and has become thine enemy? The Lord hath done to him as he spake by me, for the Lord hath rent the kingdom out of thine hand and given it to thy neighbor, even to David. Because thou obeyest not the voice of the Lord, nor executest his fierce wrath upon Amalek, therefore hath the Lord done this thing unto thee this day." And he was supposed to get rid of all the people and animals there, but he kept people alive after that battle with Amalek, disobeying directly the Lord. "Moreover, the Lord will deliver Israel with thee into the hand of the Philistines, and tomorrow shalt thou and thy sons be with me. The Lord also shall deliver the host of Israel into the hand of the Philistines." And Saul fell straightway on the earth and was sore afraid because of the words of Samuel. There was no strength in him, for he had eaten no bread all the day nor all the night. As I was reading this, I thought the next verse would be an interesting title for a message. "And the woman," this is that witch, "came unto Saul and saw that he was sore troubled and said unto him, Behold, thine handmaid hath obeyed thy voice, and I put my life in thine hand and have hearkened unto thy word which thou spakest unto me. Now therefore, I pray thee, hearken unto also unto the voice of thine handmaid, and let me set a morsel of bread before thee and eat, that thou mayest have strength when thou goest on thy way." The witch offered to give him some food to eat. You know, get some food, you need some strength, I can tell you're really distressed. That'd be an interesting study for another time. You know what Saul had a problem with? Listening to truth. Listening to truth. If you're going to have good medicine for bitterness, you deal with the resentment in your own heart. You look for the blessings of life, and you must be able to listen to truth. Samuel had told Saul the truth. David had told Saul the truth. Even his soldiers, when they said, "No, we don't want to kill the priest," had told him the truth. Here, this witch even has some truth for him in this passage from Samuel. And so, listen to the truth. We need to have discretion. Proverbs 19:11, the discretion of a man defers his anger, and in his glory, it is his glory to pass over a transgression. You know what? It's okay. I don't have to be resentful. I don't have to be up in arms about this. Have discretion. Have discernment. Hebrews 4:12, here's where discernment comes from. "For the word of God is quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing even to the dividing asunder of soul and spirit and of the joints and marrow, and is a discerner of the thoughts and intents of the heart." All we need a Bible in our life. We need a Bible in our life. So if you don't want to have bitterness, you deal with your own heart. You can't fix other people. Look for the blessings of life. Just count the blessings. Don't count the problems. And listen to the truth. Have discretion and discernment. In February of 2008, James Fantroy was convicted of stealing over $20,000 of government grants as he served in a city council, as a city council member in Dallas, Texas. Because Fantroy had kidney cancer and he used a wheelchair to get around, the U.S. district judge told him that he could choose between serving 1 month in prison or publicly apologize for his actions. One of the two things he could do to make this embezzlement right. Fantroy chose to serve a prison sentence rather than to apologize. When we choose to harbor bitter feelings and resentment towards other people, we think we're getting even with them, but in reality, we're only hurting ourselves. He had some deep resentments, and he said, "I'll do anything but say I'm sorry. Please forgive me." Bible truth, however, can resolve resentments. Let's bow together in prayer. Thank you for your good participation in the service tonight. The medicine for bitterness. Bible truth can resolve resentments. If there's some bitterness in your heart, confess that to God. Take some good medicine tonight. Deal with the bitterness or the resentment. Look to blessings in your life and listen to the truth. Is there someone that you need to forgive? Not just in words, but actively. Not just in words, but in reality. And do it. Don't let resentments put you in the prison of bitterness.